I don't know if you're like me, but I don't like a quiet car when I'm by myself. There's just something a little bit depressing about it. And so I usually always have something on, if nothing else, just background noise. But with more modern happenings, we're able to actually learn a little something on that drive. And so the other day I put a podcast on, one that I've listened to a time or two before. And ironically enough, it was on the value of silence. And as I listened to the podcast, there was an interview by a man who was an extreme hiker. He had hiked to the North Pole and had just recently hiked to the South Pole. And as he was being interviewed about that, he said that the silence on the first 2 days of that hike almost drove him crazy. He could hardly stand it. But on day three, he had gotten used to it. And he said what he began to do was to notice things that had there been noise going on, he would never have noticed before. He talked about the color of the ice and the snow. He talked about the sounds that he was hearing in nature around him. And he said that experience was actually greatly heightened by the fact that there was nothing that was distracting him from what he was seeking to accomplish. Well, that kind of stayed on my mind a few days, and I don't know if you're like me, but a verse almost immediately came to mind from Habakkuk, the prophet, and we're going to talk about that here in just a minute, that talked about silence. And so I just did a quick glance to see how many times the word silence is used in the Bible, and it's absolutely amazing how many times it is. And as I let those thoughts kind of continue on for a while, I began thinking of other ideas I had thought about concerning worship and suddenly began to realize how those two things fit together. The idea of what God says about silence and the idea of what God says on worship, the two really are inseparable. And this morning, that's what I want us to talk about. That as we think about giving God worship, of giving Him our very, very best, to understand how that need for silence is absolutely essential to become the kind of worshiper that we want to be in our desire to please God. Let's begin by talking a little bit on the topic of silence as it relates to the prophets. Now, the verse that came to my mind immediately was this, "But the Lord is in His holy temple. Let all the earth keep silence before Him." I can remember back when I was a kid, this was a verse that teachers in class would use to get you quiet. There's a little song that would be sung, and we still sing it some. It's got that very somber, quiet tone, and it worked. But that was not the reason Habakkuk spoke this. It's not the reason he recorded it from the Lord's mouth. In fact, if you remember the prophet Habakkuk's very interesting book, because he was terribly concerned about the wickedness of his people and that they were getting away with it. And he prays to God and he says, "When I look around me, all these people around me are doing wicked and they get away with it." And God says, "Just hang on, Habakkuk. I got it under control. In fact, what I'm going to do is to send in the Chaldeans, the Babylonians, and they are going to punish this people on my behalf and their wickedness is going to be righted." But Habakkuk then says, "But Lord, the Chaldeans are worse. The Babylonians are worse. How are you going to allow a people worse than these people to be the punishers?" And God says, "Don't sweat it, Habakkuk. Because when they have accomplished my purpose, I will then bring them down." In the midst of all of that, though, he begins to talk about the Chaldeans. And he begins to discuss how that they had given themselves over to idolatry. And what I'd like to do now is to take verse 20 and put it in its context in the immediate verses where the Lord is talking about this idea. And he says concerning idolaters this: "What profit is an idol when its maker has shaped it? A metal image, a teacher of lies. For it makes its maker trust in his own creation when he makes speechless idols. Woe to him who says to a wooden thing, 'Awake,' to a silent stone, 'Arise.' Can this teach? Behold, it is overlaid with gold and silver, and there is no breath at all in it. But the Lord is in his holy temple. Let all the earth keep silence before him." This was not a verse to say, "Get quiet when you come into worship." This was a verse to say, "Get quiet and recognize who you're dealing with." In fact, look at the irony that Habakkuk speaks of here. He says, here's the problem. You've got these folks, and they're creating this God out of stone or wood, and the God is quiet while the worshipers are noisy around it. Does that remind you of anything? Does that remind you of a situation in the Bible where there was a silent false god and all the worshipers were involved in all these shenanigans to try to get the God's attention? There on Mount Carmel, it says concerning the prophets of Baal, they took the bull that was given them and they prepared and called upon the name of Baal from morning until noon, saying, O Baal, answer us. But there was no voice. No one answered. And they limped around the altar that they had made. And then Elijah kind of pours a little gas on the fire here. At noon, Elijah mocked them, saying, cry aloud, for he is a god. Either he is musing, or he is relieving himself, or he is on a journey, or perhaps he is asleep and must be awakened. And they cried aloud and cut themselves after their custom with swords and lances until blood gushed out upon them. That's exactly what God's talking about. Here is this false god who is silent because it has no ability to say anything, and the worshipers are noisy around it trying to get its attention. And we know how that ended. And thus, what does Habakkuk tell us? What does he say is the point of all of this, of being silent because the Lord is in his holy temple? He's saying, you need to be quiet and watch what your God's going to do. Remember, Habakkuk's a little doubtful here about the whole plan of God. God says, be quiet and follow along. Listen to what I'm going to do and watch and see if it's not true. A little bit less known, minor prophet, is the prophet Zechariah, who also has something to say about silence when he says in his book, be silent, all flesh, before the Lord, for he has roused himself from his holy dwelling. Again, a little bit of context. In the first half of the book of Zechariah, Zechariah is given all of these very amazing visions, these apocalyptic scenes where God is saying, very similar to what he said to Habakkuk, I can take care of the situation. I know who is against me, and I know who is for me. And I want to focus in on that with Zechariah. And again, let's take this and put it in its context in the surrounding verses. And here's what he says. He says, sing and rejoice, O daughter of Zion, for behold, I come, and I will dwell in your midst, declares the Lord, and many nations shall join themselves to the Lord in that day and shall be my people. And I will dwell in your midst, and you shall know that the Lord of hosts has sent me to you, and the Lord will inherit Judah as his portion in a holy land, and will again choose Jerusalem. Be silent, all flesh, before the Lord, for he has aroused himself from his holy dwelling. Those verses ought to sound very familiar to us, because this is an Old Testament prophet prophesying very New Testament things. The idea that we will be a part of God's people, the idea that God is going to make us holy, while in the short term, those to whom Zechariah wrote could understand it, in the long term, we understand how that all of this will be fulfilled by Jesus Christ. And thus, Zechariah is after this vision where God is showing, I know which people are mine, I know who they are. He then says, you watch and see. And thus, what does Zechariah say? He says, when you are silent, you can then see God springing His plan, springing into action. In fact, that's such an important verse that when you look at a different translation of the Bible, it translates it something like this, where it says, be silent before the Lord, all humanity, for He is springing into action from His holy dwelling. I like that idea. I think it connects with what Zechariah is saying. Stand back. Because God is about to get busy on this plan. This plan that is unfolding, you are going to see it. And how much more so for those of us on this side of the cross that we can see that. Well, let's look at a third prophet. The prophet Isaiah, one of the longest recorded prophets of the Bible, also says this concerning silence when he says, on behalf of God, listen to me in silence, O coastlands. Let the peoples renew their strength. Let them approach, then let them speak. Let us together draw near for judgment. That verse may not be very familiar to you. But I think when we put it in its context, the passage is going to sound a whole lot more familiar to us because this follows one of the best known parts of the book of Isaiah. Putting it in its context, Isaiah says, "Have you not known? Have you not heard? The Lord is the everlasting God, the creator of the ends of the earth. He does not faint or grow weary. His understanding is unsearchable. He gives power to the faint, and to him who has no might, he increases strength. Even youth shall faint and be weary, and young men shall fall exhausted. But they who wait for the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings like eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint. Listen to me in silence, O coastlands. Let the peoples renew their strength. Let them approach. Let them speak. Let us together draw near for judgment. Who stirred up one from the east whom victory meets at every step?" Isaiah says there's lots of times in this life where it appears God's people are defeated, where it appears even the young men don't have the strength to go on. But Isaiah records for us the words of God where he says, "You listen in silence to this." And the point that Isaiah makes is you need to listen quietly to be in awe of what God does for his people, the work that he's going to do. And so along with Habakkuk and along with Zechariah, Isaiah says, be quiet and pay attention to the work of God. Let's look at one more prophet. This one usually not considered with the prophets, but he certainly was, and that was King David. I'd encourage you to look over to Psalm 62. In your Bibles, and I'd like for us to read a section of this psalm together. And as David here is talking about the Lord and the need for silence, let's listen to what he has to say. We're going to read the first 8 verses together. He says, "For God alone my soul waits in silence. From him comes my salvation. He only is my rock and my salvation, my fortress. I shall not be greatly shaken. How long will all of you attack a man to batter him? Like a leaning wall, a tottering fence. They only plan to thrust him down from his high position. They take pleasure in falsehood. They bless him with mouths, but inwardly they curse. For God alone, O my soul, wait in silence. For my hope is from him. He only is my rock and my salvation, my fortress. I shall not be shaken. On God rest my salvation and my glory. My mighty rock, my refuge is God. Trust in him at all times, O people. Pour out your heart before him. God is a refuge for us." It's almost as if David is speaking to himself and giving himself reminders when he says, look, to his soul, you got to wait. And not only must you wait on the Lord, you must wait in silence because it's from him salvation comes. And then again in verse 5, "For God alone, O my soul, wait in silence, for my hope is on him." And so here is a man classified as a man after God's own heart. Yet what is the lesson that he's teaching us as a prophet of God? What he's saying is, when it looks like you're about to be defeated, be quiet. When it looks like the world is falling in around you, when your enemies are pressing in, be quiet. Now, take the words of those 4 prophets and store them back for a minute. And I want to turn our attention to the book of Psalms. Because in the book of Psalms, we find another idea coming out, the idea of meditation. And the idea of silence and meditation, again, fit together hand in glove. When we look at the book of Psalms, it has more to say about meditating on God in one confined place than perhaps any other. 14 times we're going to find the mention of meditation, much of that coming from the 119th Psalm. In fact, I think every idea that we find in the book of Psalms on meditation, we can find an example of it in Psalm 119. And thus, what do we see? Here we find the psalmist saying, "Make me understand the way of your precepts, and I will meditate on your wondrous work." He goes on to say in verse 148, "My eyes are awake before the watches of the night, that I may meditate on your promises." So the psalmist says we meditate on God's work. He says we meditate on God's promises. And then I want us to note where he really hones in. when on four different occasions he's going to talk about meditating on the Word of God. Verse 15, I will meditate on your precepts and fix my eyes on your ways. Verse 23, even though princes sit plotting against me, your servant will meditate on your statutes. And then again, same two ideas repeated. Verse 48, I will lift up my hands toward your commandments, which I love, and I will meditate on your statutes. And then finally, in verse 78, the end of it, as for me, I will meditate on your precepts. The Word of God, the work of God, the promises of God, all objects of meditation. Now let's take all this and put it together. When I think about meditating on the ways of God, and I read what the psalmist is saying here, that's going to require several things of me. First of all, it means that there must be a silence of physical sound. Now, we may say that we can meditate well when the world is bubbling and noisy around us. I highly doubt that. I think we probably deceive ourselves. We need the physical quiet, but we also need the quiet of outside influence. This does not need to be a time when we're looking at the Word of God and we're trying to find an answer to a Bible question or we're trying to prepare for Bible class. Those are good things. It's a time when simply we are reflecting on God. And that time of meditation then allows the secular to be drowned out. That the holy is going to be able to be heard in our minds because we've segregated that out. We've said the things that are pressing in from my life, I'm putting those on hold. This is a time that I'm devoting myself to God. Sometimes we hear that in prayers. When we begin to enter into a time of worship, someone may pray, help us to shut out the cares of this world. Well, that's very much the idea of the psalmist. Here is the idea of meditation. Because what that means for us is that we are giving ourselves a time simply to reflect on God. Let me throw a New Testament idea in here that I think illustrates all of that quite well. When the apostle says, finally, brothers, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is commendable, if there is any excellence, if there is anything worthy of praise, think. A lot of translations here say, meditate about these things. So thus the psalmist says, there needs to be time in your life when you're closing out everything except God. And it's not that you're trying to find some particular point about God, you are just simply dedicating yourself to think about work and promises and His Word. So now pull those prophets back up and let's see what we've got here. The prophets say silence is going to help us to see God's superiority over idols. Silence is going to show us the way God has a plan for our salvation. Silence is going to give us the ability to see His help that He gives to His people. And that silence is going to show us that God has the power to prevail. Meditation, then, is going to help us to see how God is working these things. Meditation is going to help us to see the promises that He will fulfill. Meditation is going to help us to understand His Word. And we take all of this and we put it together and we find quite a big picture now of what silence is going to do and what meditation, which is walking hand in hand with it, is going to do. But now you're thinking, I thought this lesson was on silence and worship. It is. That's the foundation. That's the understanding. That if we are going to be the kind of worshipers that God desires for us to be, we have to understand from all of this, it is not just going to happen. We can come together and we can give a guise of worship. We can have a facade that we're worshiping. But what the Lord calls this is something that is just simply on the surface, just simply from the lips. In fact, you remember what He said about people of the days when He walked the earth? He said, well did Isaiah prophesy of you hypocrites, as it is written, this people honors me with their lips, but their heart is far from me. You see, if I put no thought into my worship, If I give nothing to God other than a few vocalizations out of my mouth, what he says to me is, you've drawn near to me with your lips, with your mouth, but your heart is far from me. Worship requires effort. And what that means is, if we are going to become that kind of worshiper, in the prophetic sense that we've seen this morning in that use of silence, then we understand being a true worshiper, being a worshiper who is truly seeking to honor God, that it's actually going to begin with silence. Because here's what I would suggest to us. Silence is the premeditation for worship. Sometimes we talk about premeditation in a bad sense, don't we? We talk about somebody who was planning some crime. It was a premeditated crime. Well, let me tell you, premeditation is also a very good idea. It's the idea that when I come together with others to worship, or when I'm worshiping God in my private time, it's going to begin, first of all, with a thinking of who God is and what God is and what God has done and the promises God has made and the word that He's given to me. That's where all of this has its beginning. Because it will be in that time of premeditation that I begin to appreciate God for who He is. You see, if I don't ever think about it, if I don't ever study about it, if I don't ever meditate on what He's done, I'll never, ever, ever know who He is. Why is it that so many Christians fall away from God? I'm convinced that a part of that answer is they never really knew who He was. They never really understood who He was. And thus we find that if we are going to appreciate God, it begins by giving this time to Him. It's interesting to me that when we talk about this silence, the idea really comes out in the book of Job. So I was doing a little bit of study on that and noticed where there were high concentrations of the term silence. Much of that was found in the book of Job. But it wasn't really in a good sense. It was more of the idea of, would you be silent so I can talk? Would you be silent so I can get my point across? But then at the end of the book, something pretty amazing happens. Job says this. He answered the Lord and said, "Behold, I am of small account. What shall I answer you? I lay my hand on my mouth." You want to know one of the points of the book of Job? Eliphaz and Bildad and Zophar and Elihu and Job, none of them knew who God was. None of them knew. Now, Job was close. He's called a great man. He's called a servant of God. But one of the reasons God allows all of these things to happen is because Job had not come to the understanding of God that he needed to have. And so after all of these times and speeches and things that Job is saying and the friends are replying, Job says, "What I need to know and what I've learned by all of this is I need to be quiet. I need to think about who you are, rather than trying to get my argument across." So we put all of that together. And what does it mean? It means that when I'm silent, it's going to help me recognize the superiority of God's ways. You see, all of this business of, "Well, God said, but I think," goes out the window. When I come to a full appreciation of who He is, listen to how that comes out from a man who is one of perhaps the least known folks of the Bible, a man whom Jesus healed, and he's being questioned about it. And he retorts this in John chapter 9. He says, "We know that God does not listen to sinners. But if anyone is a worshiper of God and does His will, God listens to him." Here's a simple man, had a hard life, not known for his theology, not known as a great thinker. In fact, we don't even know his name. But listen to what he says. He says, if you want to be a worshiper of God, that's always linked with doing what God wants. You can't separate those two things. You can't say, "I like this," even though God doesn't. and think that you're going to be the kind of worshiper that God desires. When we're quiet, we hear the superiority of God's ways much more than when we're noisy. That's what Job taught us. But yet, what else do we learn from this? We learn His plan for salvation. As Jesus was talking to the Samaritan woman, listen to what He says to her. He says, "You worship what you do not know. We worship what we know, for salvation is from the Jews. But the hour is coming and is now here when the true worshipers will worship the Father in spirit and truth, for the Father is seeking such people to worship Him. God is spirit, and those who worship must worship in spirit and truth." Jesus says, if you will listen to what's coming, you're going to know the plan of God. You've heard a lot about the Jews. You've heard a lot about the Samaritans. Now just be quiet and pay attention. Because what you're about to hear is going to be a monumental change, not only in your beliefs, but in worship as well. The same is true for us. When you and I are quiet, we see God's superiority. We hear His ideas. We hear His plan for salvation. And when we are quiet, it means we're going to hear His power, not only in what He's done, but also and what He's going to do for us. I guess when we think about the ultimate passage about worship, so succinctly stated concerning the attitude we need to have for God, it's found in Hebrews 12:28. When He says, "Therefore, let us be grateful for receiving a kingdom that cannot be shaken. And thus let us offer to God acceptable worship, the way He wants it, with reverence to give Him honor, and with awe." You see, that's what we learn when we're quiet. That's what we learn when we're meditating on God, when we're premeditating for worship. We're hearing about His work of people past. We're hearing the promises that He makes for us. We're hearing the things that through His Word He has given to us. And thus, what that then means is that when I'm quiet, it's going to give me a time for reading and for reflecting on who He is. This is how I become a worshiper. This is how I become someone who is not just pouring words out of my mouth with no thought in my heart. One of the interesting things that you can see throughout the Bible concerning worship is how so many times there are people who just seemingly immediately break into worship. Let me give you just one example of that. 2 Chronicles chapter 20, big battles brewing, Jehoshaphat's the king. And he says, "Tomorrow go down against them. Behold, they will come up by the ascent of Ziz. They will find them at the end of the valley, east of the wilderness of Jeruel. You will not need to fight in this battle. Stand firm, hold your position, and see the salvation of the Lord on your behalf, O Judah and Jerusalem. Do not be afraid. Do not be dismayed. Tomorrow go out against them and the Lord will be with you." That's not particularly a battle strategy most of us would like to follow, is it? Stand still. Don't lift a sword. Don't do a thing. Don't retreat. Just stand there. But look at what it says then. "Then Jehoshaphat bowed his head with his face to the ground, and all Judah and the inhabitants of Jerusalem fell down before the Lord, worshiping the Lord." Why'd they do that? Premeditation. Oh, Judah had some bad days. We know about those. But Judah also had some pretty good ones. And the time of King Jehoshaphat is a time when they are doing pretty well. And here are people who know their God to the point that if God says, "Stand still, I'll handle it," what they can do is immediately fall and worship. And I ask us, can we do that? Is your first thought to worship God when something bad happens? Or when you get out of a bad situation, your first thought is to worship God? That's where the quiet, that's where the premeditation takes place. Because you see, when I'm thinking about God and I'm not letting things interfere with what He's told me about Himself, it's then I can become a worshiper. So let's boil it all down. Practically speaking, we need to be quiet. We spend way too much time talking. We spend way too much trying to define God by our own terms. We spend way too much time looking for specific questions and answers out of the Bible without ever understanding the God behind it. But when you and I can be quiet and meditate on who He is, it is then we will be prepared to become those worshipers that God desires. As Jesus was dealing with the devil, and He faced that last temptation as recorded by Matthew, Jesus said to him, "Away from me, Satan, for it is written, 'Worship the Lord your God and serve Him only.'" That's what God desires from us, that we are going to be worshipers of God. And I hope this morning we've been encouraged to be just that.